This is Stateside. I'm April Baer.
Let's turn to the latest public health data. Michigan has a clearer picture today of where COVID hotspots are cropping up. The state's Department of Health and Human Services has released data on 1,400 cases across K-12 schools, colleges, and universities. Given the information that's been trickling out of places like Ann Arbor and East Lansing, these may not come as a huge surprise, but the data may sharpen the picture. For help with the numbers, we're joined by Emily Martin, an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Emily, welcome back to Stateside.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So just to summarize what we know in terms of higher ed, cases on the campus of the University of Michigan and Central Michigan University have been up and down a bit, but haven't shown huge spikes that we know of. Grand Valley State still leads all the other schools with 438 cases. And at Adrian College, at least 10% of its population has the virus. And at Michigan State University, the cases have climbed to such a point where Ingham County's health officials have called for a 14-day quarantine. Were there any surprises in the data that the state made available yesterday?
I think it confirms what I have been sort of surprised by so far, but it sort of makes sense, is what I call the hotspot nature of this virus, is that it doesn't go up everywhere at the same time. You might have big situations taking off in places, and especially in some of these smaller colleges where it's really evident that something's happening. You may see other places that are still calm and not a whole lot happening there. So it's really kind of an uneven pattern that we're seeing in all different parts of the state in terms of who's taking off and who's not.
You know, I feel like I need to qualify the word quarantine. I know that Michigan state officials had called for a quarantine last week, but added that it would be okay for students to continue to go to class if they were meeting face-to-face, to go shopping if they needed to. Do you think that we're at a point where we need a new way of communicating to people what steps are appropriate?
I think that's a good way. That's a good way to put that. And so, you know, because we use the word quarantine for so many different things, when really what we want to do is create more space between us. And you know, what we hear from our colleagues and other colleges around the country is there's not a whole lot of transmission that's being seen in the classroom, even in places that are having a lot of cases. It's really the socializing outside of the classroom where we're most concerned. And so, you know, that's, you call it quarantine, you can call it whatever you want. We just don't want people to gather in big groups, especially in scenarios where you don't have a lot of controls and mitigation measures in place, like you might have in a classroom where the, you know, desks are spread out and you might have face shields or other kind of protections in the room.
What's your impression of how Michigan is doing overall with the availability of tests?
So, you know, there's a lot of tests, and the tests across the state keep going up and up and up, and that's good to see. I know there's a lot of efforts statewide to try to push more tests into the system all over the state. I do think that we're eventually going to get to a point where, you know, really this is a national level issue and a national level supply chain problem we're going to keep running into. And really, you know, I'm pushing more and more for a national level solution for this is what I would like to see us be at eventually.
You know, there are some students at schools that are attached to medical programs like the University of Michigan that have expressed surprise that testing isn't more widely available. We should say this has definitely come up at the University of Michigan, which, by the way, holds Michigan Radio's license and, of course, is your employer. Mm-hmm. Do you have any insight about why universities, especially those that do have medical schools attached to them, have not been able to test more widely or communicate results more clearly?
You know, I think that there's a balance in you know, it's there's a balance between making sure that you are providing clinical, all of the other clinical care needs, and providing tests for the different priorities of testing, or the tiers of testing, as I call it. And I think medical centers tend to be caught right in the middle of that balance because they have this responsibility to the whole community. And all of the other players in the community that need ready access to tests also, nursing homes, prisons, jails, K-12 schools. And so I think some of this is a reflection of that need to kind of be a member of the wider community and balance that with the needs of testing on campus.
The state also yesterday listed a handful of outbreaks at K-12 schools. Now, all of them are officially listed at fewer than half a dozen cases. Should we assume that those numbers are representative, or are you concerned that maybe we don't know as much as we might?
So I think it helps to understand how we think about the term outbreak or the term cluster when we're talking about schools. So we're really carefully trying to look for instances where there are cases that we think of that are related to each other and that are related somehow to the school. They had some sort of contact or interaction in that setting. So what it's going to miss is that overall level of cases that are rising in a community. It's sort of kind of think about it like the high water mark. As the water gets higher, all cases are going to go up. And you may or may not see that reflected in a particular building, for instance. So it is only one piece of the picture.
Are the current stated number of cases at K through 12 schools, are they of concern to you?
It's about what I would expect. Seeing what's in the community around, it does seem to be where it seems like things would be if we've got, you know, we have a fair amount of virus in our communities around the state still. And so it seems to follow with that pattern.
Right. What's on your mind with respect to stabilizing Michigan's situation for the fall? Do you think that people should be more concerned about community spread, or maybe their interactions outside of their home communities that might get the virus moving in places where it hasn't been?
I think that this is a time to be conservative. And with our interactions, especially outside of our schools and workplaces. And the reason for that is, you know, I think that we're moving into cold and flu season, which is going to be a really complex and challenging time. And so the lower that we can get community transmission now, while we still have, you know, really only COVID that we're dealing with on our landscape, the better off we'll be as we move into January and February.
We should mention that our guest Emily Martin is like so many people working from home right now and with her canine assistance team there in the background. Emily Martin, should the focus be on the fact that there are new cases cropping up, or should we just not worry too much about the fact that, yes, the virus is here, it is among us, and we should focus on how fast we can get people identified and quarantined if they are positive for COVID?
You know, all of the data I've seen have said that the speed to identify and quarantine people and to do the contact tracing is really the most effective tool that we have. And so making sure we keep our eye on quarantine and isolation is I think, it's really what we need to focus on going forward.
There had been high hopes that Michigan would be able to ramp up contact tracing quickly, both with volunteers and with the health departments who traditionally do this work, and maybe with some additional workers that the state might hire. Do you have any thoughts on how that process has played out in Michigan so far?
I think the numbers I've seen have shown that the capacity has really been building, and it's been building nicely and building in a lot of regions in the state. I think, you know, from what I'm hearing, there's a lot more challenges in working with people that we need to get into contact with in order to do these processes. People need to answer their phone, and people need to help. And it's not a punitive process. It's the goal of contact tracing is to try to help protect the community by making sure that people who are infected aren't moving around in our spaces. And so we really need the community's cooperation with that effort.
At this stage, are you thinking much about the possibility of another winter surge that might have the potential to overwhelm hospitals and other healthcare providers?
I think it's prudent for us to be prepared for that. Not even just for a winter surge of COVID infections, but the potential of layering those infections on top of what we'll need to do to take care of people with influenza and with other respiratory viruses. So I think it's smart for us to be preparing for that.
No question. I feel like this is one of the unspoken truths that anyone who works in a nursing home or an assisted living facility can actually tell you a lot about. Overall, would you say that infection control among vulnerable populations is where it needs to be?
Absolutely. And, you know, we know that PPE works. So masks work to be able to slow things down. We actually, you know, we see this in our hospitals where people are taking care of patients that are infected every day. And they're doing that by using appropriate PPE. And I think the faster we can get that distributed around the community, the better.
I'm sure the difficulties associated with so many at-risk populations feeling a bit more isolated is another topic for another day.
Absolutely. You know, this is really the time where we need to think about, I've heard some people refer to it as our social distancing budget, our risk budget. And, you know, think about spaces in your life that you might be able to dial back a little bit to allow you the, you know, the bandwidth and the infection-free time to be able to engage in school and work going into the fall.
Emily Martin is an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Emily, thanks so much.
Thank you.